Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Writer Charlotte Bingham's father, John Bingham, worked for MI5 and was the inspiration for Jean Le Carré's spy, George Smiley. In this fascinating and hilarious new memoir, she recalls how she was just 18 when she learned about his secret life of guns, burglaries and bogeys, and how he insisted she work at MI5 as a secretary. It's been written by Charlotte Bingham, MI5 and me, a coronet amongst the spooks. Delighted to be joining me live on the line. Charlotte Bingham. Charlotte, good morning. Good to have you with us. It's a fascinating tale. It's made me smile my little face off this morning. How did you end up working in MI5 then? And did you have any inclination that your father might be a real life spook?
No, of course I didn't. Excuse me. No, absolutely not. My father, I thought, just did a very boring job in what he calls the War Office. And then when I was about 18, he said, I think it's about time you knew. I said, what? Know what? And he said, I work at MI5 and I run agents. And if you want my reaction as an 18-year-old, I thought it was horrid.
So you're an 18-year-old at some point in the shall we say, the mid to late 50s at this point?
That's right, yes, absolutely. And anyway, then... I wanted to be a writer, but he didn't think it was a good idea to stay at home writing because he thought that was, you should have a job. It's not a proper job.
Right.
So he got me a job at MI5, and I don't know why, but a couple of years ago, about a year ago, I suppose it is now, anyway, I suddenly woke up and trotted at 5 o'clock in the morning, trotted down to my study, and I wrote the first chapter of MI5 and Me, and I don't know why I did.
What was the interview technique or the interview practice like then for a job at MI5? Did you have to go through some physical training? Were you had to prove yourself in combat? I mean, what was the interview process like?
No, absolutely not. What it was is you had to sign the Official Secrets Act. One of the things says, do you attend nightclubs and such and such, stay out late sort of thing. And I went to him and I said, well, I've got to put yes, because I, quite often taken to nightclubs by, friends.
Right.
And he said, oh, don't worry, just put no. So I put, should I put no? Then I thought, I better not. I put yes, but they didn't seem to make any difference.
And so you were hired then, basically. Did you have to prepare yourself in any particular way? I mean, when you walk into a first day in your new office, your new job, you often think, well, I better dress smartly. What's it like? What did you have to do for your first day at MI5?
You had to have very good shorthand and typing speeds. I had those already, but the protocol was that you worked in a large room with lots of other secretaries doing the same sort of work, but working for different people. And, of course, the amusing thing is when people have to type out, recorded conversations and that sort of thing, and you could see people laughing, while they were typing. Because you'd be hearing some quite intense conversations from people who were being tracked by MI5.
So, What was it? Also, what was it? You know, was there a sort of an esprit de corps? Did you get taken under your wing, or were there people you had to sort of stay away from? There's a mention in the book of Dragon Dewsbury. Is that correct?
No. Because I wasn't exceptionally good at shorthand. One of the people I worked for, you know, because you work for quite a few different people, she was very, very strict. And, you know, if you made one mistake, and in those days you were typing on these huge old Remingtons, you know, and it sort of everything was in triplicate and had carbon sheets, you know, between the pages and everything. So if you made a mistake, it took forever to correct it. But what she'd do is she'd just put a line, one letter out of place, she'd put a line straight through the memo and you'd have to go downstairs and do it all over again. I got so distracted by what I was writing my first book at that point, that I got so worried about doing all my memos wrong, thinking I'd probably cause a world war if I went on as I was. I used to go to the secretarial pool about 7 in the morning and redo all my work. Because I was so worried about what I was doing.
But you also had a friend in there who told you that this particular woman who was overseeing you didn't like garlic and didn't like Richard Burton in the theatre.
Yes. Well, that's one of the other things was that I thought the room was very dreary. You know what I mean? These sort of government sponsors or government departments are very they're sort of dark. Well, in those days they're probably gorgeous now, but they were just dark green cabinets. So I started to stick pictures of movie stars on the security cupboards and things, and I had a bottle of champagne on my desk, which was quite out of order. Unopened, I have to say.
Oh, right, okay, fair
and
enough.
And the supervisor came down and said, no, you take those down at once, you know, and remove the champagne. Far too cheerful looking.
what was the day in day out? I mean, you imagine it's a very glamorous time with, you know, stuff happening in Berlin. You know, the Iron Curtain has gone down. You know, there's all sorts of things going on around the world. Was it sort of you listening to sort of dashing conversations?
No, it was a long time before the Iron Curtain came down. This was at the height of the Cold War, really. You didn't really have I certainly didn't have a very strong feeling that I was, you know, doing anything very sort of important. And until you sort of, you'd hear somebody had actually caught a spy, and then it got very exciting. And I remember the section above us, the ceiling practically coming through, because they just caught somebody very dangerous, so that was very good.
And what was it like then in your home life? Because were you still living at home at that point?
I was, yes. And it wasn't until, because for various reasons, I didn't really sort of connect all sorts of people who came to the house. I just sort of, my parents had an ever-open door for all sorts of people came and went and etc. And it wasn't for years that I realised that most of them were my father's agents.
Right. So, I mean, what was it like when once it was out in the open that, you know, your father was a spy, you were working for MI5, were you allowed to sort of talk about it? I mean, did he bring his work home? Were you finding sort of secret microdots of film around the house, you know, weapons in the cupboards, that sort of thing?
Well, he always carried a knuckle duster, and he walked with a sword stick.
Oh, wow.
I know. I don't know why, I sort of took it for granted that everybody else's fathers did, you know. Even when I was quite young, I used to try his knuckle duster on, and it was sort of try to pretend to sort of hit him with it, and he'd be very playful about it and everything. But once I had signed the Official Secrets Act, then he would tell me all sorts of interesting things about spy work, and you know, what he ran spies. He wasn't a spy himself. And one of the things he said, which is quite pertinent to today, was that. Used to say in a rather mournful voice that we would never catch up with the Russians because they were so good at spying. And I, when I asked him why, he said because they've been doing it since the 13th century, and we've only been doing it since Elizabethan times, so we're a couple of centuries behind. And he said nobody would ever beat them.
So what was, I mean, what did you enjoy your time working at MI5, and how long were you there for?
I was there 2.5 years. And I enjoyed it very much because of the nice people I met there. And you one has to remember that most of the people I work for, in fact, all the people I work for, had fought the Second World War. So the first thing that one would like to know now is, you know, what are their experiences and everything. But then, you know, you didn't really take in that somebody had been a rear gunner and, you know, had flown night flights over Berlin and all these extraordinary things that we know about now. But as everybody says now, you don't really get anything out of people at that time. Well, we didn't dare even ask, you know, what wartime experiences had been like, because people just wouldn't talk about it.
Mm. And there's another little chapter in the book is where your mother says, you know, to you that your father's just going off to do some burglary, and you think it's a financial crisis in the household.
Yes. Well, I you know, you don't really, there's a part of you that accepts what your parents or your father does in this particular case. You had to accept what he did, but I never thought he did. He'd have to commit burglaries, but he did. But they weren't always very successful. So once he nearly got caught by the police.
Just the way that your mother says that he's going to have to do burglary, and you say, oh dear, have the bills mounted up that much?
Yes, this is about, well, you know, money was always short in the 1950s for everybody.
When you'd left MI5, did you find yourself your training kicking in then a little bit later? Could you think you could, you know, in a room full of people at a social occasion a little bit later on in your career, you could probably spot somebody who worked for the service?
No, but I had a very naughty friend that I worked. She wasn't actually in the same section as me, but she and I was at a really rather grand ball, and I passed her on the dance floor, and I heard her somebody saying, "What do you do?" The person she was dancing with, and her saying, "Oh, I work at MI5," which is completely not what you should do or say. And so when I saw her a few hours later, I said, "You know, you really shouldn't say that." And she just looked at me and said, "Well, they never believe you." But you know, my late husband used to say that it made me suspicious of people. I don't think it's quite true, but he always said, you know, it gives you a sort of suspicion about people's attitudes and things. But I don't think that's actually quite true, but it probably does change you slightly.
You said that you woke up one morning and started sort of writing this memoir.
Yeah.
Why do you think the time was right now then, and especially the time right with our relationship with our Russian compatriots? Why do you think the time was right to start writing this now?
I don't know what it was. It's most extraordinary, because I haven't written in this style for years and years, you know, and I've written over 35, you know, historical romantic novels, etc. And I suddenly found myself going back to the style, which the last book I wrote for this, my husband and I wrote a comedy series which was very successful on both sides of the Atlantic, called No Honestly. And that was based on a book called Coronet Among the Grass. But so I haven't written in this style for so long, and I just suddenly had a sort of dawn awakening. And I suppose I suddenly thought of something funny that had happened.
Looking back, did the writing the book give you a better appreciation of your father and your mother, and what did you take from it?
Yes, that's rather, well, it's a very clever question, because in actual fact, I realised long after I'd finished it that I'd sort of been writing, if you like, the domestic life of George Smiley, you know, because part of George Smiley is based, according to John le Carré, on my father. And, you know, it's quite amusing to see George Smiley doing burglaries that nearly go wrong. It's not what you see in the movies, you know, everything's very sort of dark and everything, and his wife's a nymphomaniac and goodness knows what. But in real life, you know, a spy, a man running a spy has a very sort of different domestic life, because one of the things which I remember very well of my father was at Christmas time he would come loaded with presents through the door, because all his agents had to have presents, and their pets, I have to tell you. And so, you know, there'd be presents for the dog and presents for them and presents for their mothers and goodness knows what. He was very paternalistic about his agents. And when I asked him once why someone became an agent, because it's a very serious commitment. You know, if you decide to pose as a communist, which is what they were doing, and go to work, say, for the Daily Worker or whatever it was, you had to actually convince your own family that you had decided to become a communist. It was the only way. You know, that was your belief. And they had to disaffect themselves very often from their families, would have nothing more to do with them. So it was very, very brave in that way. But the other thing as well was that he said, you never know, there's never one reason why someone becomes an agent, ever. He said that there are all different reasons. He said, don't think it's always patriotism or whatever. It's just all very, very different. Sometimes they want to get back at society in some way. Sometimes it's all very different. They, you know, had a broken romance and feel very sore and hurt about something, and they go to an extreme extent and think, right, I'm going to do this, and it's going to be, it's dangerous, you know. I mean, a childhood friend of mine, her husband was killed on Westminster Bridge with a poisoned umbrella, if you remember, really, well, you're too young, but years and years ago.
The Bulgarian ambassador, wasn't it?
Why they wanted to kill him was because he was doing, I asked my father, and he said it's because he was doing such wonderful work, working for the BBC World Service, and his broadcasts, which were very, very anti-communist, were succeeding behind the Iron Curtain, and so they put an end to him.
If your father was around today, would he just be looking at what's happening over the weekend and shaking his head and said, oh, blimey, we're getting involved with the Russians again, and they are several hundred years ahead of us in their spy techniques?
Yes, exactly. And John le Carré gave a very good lecture at the Royal Albert Hall, in which he said, you know, that these are not his words, but this is the meaning of them was that looking back, it looks like a walk in the park, working for MI5 compared to nowadays. It's so difficult now with, you know, computers and goodness knows what, you know, everything that is so swift and people's change of identity, you know, just happens at the touch of a button, you know.
The book is called MI5 and Me, A Collet Amongst Spooks. It's by Charlotte Bingham. It's out now on Bloomsbury Publishing. Charlotte, what do you hope that people will take away from the book? A sense of fun as well as a fascinating insight into the world of MI5?
I hope it'll make them laugh. A lot of people have read it and said, oh, a lovely lady journalist came from the Tatler, and she told me that when she was reading it, you know, for purposes of work, obviously, that she was laughing so much that her husband got cross because he was trying to go to sleep. So she put the book down and turned the light off, but she went on laughing, went on annoying him.
There can be no higher praise than that, then, from ladies annoying their husbands. The book is called MI5 and Me, A Coroner Amongst Spooks. It's by Charlotte Bingham. Charlotte, thank you so much for your time today.
No, thank you for the interview. It's very kind of you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiropractic.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.